So the interviewer asks, "What is your greatest fear?" Rosa read the question out loud and then looked across the kitchen table at her husband, Henry. Now in their 70s, Rosa and Henry had lived in this house and sat at this same table together on most mornings for more than 50 years. Between them sat a pot of tea, an open pack of Oreos, half eaten, and an audio recorder. In the corner of the room, a video camera. Next to the video camera sat a young Harvard researcher named Charlotte, quietly observing and taking notes. "It's quite the question," Rosa said. "My greatest fear," Henry said to Charlotte, "or our greatest fear?" Rosa and Henry didn't think of themselves as particularly interesting subjects for a study. They'd both grown up poor, married in their 20s, and raised 5 kids together. They'd lived through the Great Depression and plenty of hard times, sure, but that was no different from anyone else they knew. So they never understood why Harvard researchers were interested in the first place, let alone why they were still interested, still calling, still sending questionnaires, and occasionally still flying across the country to visit. Henry was only 14 years old and living in Boston's West End in a tenement with no running water when researchers from the study first knocked on his family's door and asked his perplexed parents if they could make a record of his life. The study was in full swing when he married Rosa in August of 1954. The records show that when she said yes to his proposal, Henry couldn't believe his luck. And now, here they were in October of 2004, 2 months after their 50th wedding anniversary. Rosa had been asked to participate more directly in the study in 2002. "It's about time," she said. Harvard had been tracking Henry year after year since 1941. Rosa often said she thought it was odd that he still agreed to be involved as an older man because he was so private otherwise. But Henry said he felt a sense of duty to participate and had also developed an appreciation for the process because it gave him perspective on things. So for 63 years, he had opened his life to the research team. In fact, he'd told them so much about himself and for so long that he couldn't even remember what they did and didn't know. But he assumed they knew everything, including certain things he'd never told to anyone but Rosa, because whenever they asked a question, he did his best to tell the truth. And they asked a lot of questions. "Mr. Keene was clearly flattered that I had come to Grand Rapids to interview them," Charlotte would write in her field notes, "and this set a friendly atmosphere for the interview. I found him to be a cooperative and interested person. He was thoughtful about each answer and often paused for a few moments before he responded. He was friendly, though, and I felt that he was like the stereotype of the quiet man from Michigan." Charlotte was there for a 2-day visit to interview the Keens and administer a survey, a very long survey, of questions about their health, their individual lives, and their life together. Like most of our young researchers embarking on new careers, Charlotte had her own questions about what makes a good life and how her current choices might affect her future. Was it possible that insights about her own life could be locked away in the lives of others? The only way to find out was to ask questions and to be deeply attentive to every person she interviewed. What was important to this particular individual? What gave their days meaning? What had they learned from their experiences? What did they regret? Every interview presented Charlotte with new opportunities to connect with a person whose life was further along than her own, who came from different circumstances and a different moment in history. Today, she would interview Henry and Rosa together, administer the survey, and then videotape them talking together about their greatest fears. She would also interview them separately in what we call attachment interviews. Back in Boston, the videotapes and interview transcripts would be studied so that the way Henry and Rosa talked about each other, their nonverbal cues, and many other bits of information could be coded into data on the nature of their bond, data that would become part of their files and one small but important piece of a giant data set on what a lived life is actually like. What is your greatest fear? Charlotte had already recorded their individual answers to this question in separate interviews, but now it was time to discuss the question with each other. The discussion went like this. "I like the hard questions in a certain way," Rosa said. "Well, good," Henry said. "You go first." Rosa was quiet for a moment and then told Henry her greatest fear was that he might develop a serious health condition or that she would have another stroke. Henry agreed that those were very scary possibilities. But, he said, they were getting to the point where something like that was probably inevitable. They spoke at length about how a serious illness might affect their adult children's lives and each other. Eventually, Rosa admitted that there was only so much a person could anticipate, and there was no use in getting upset before it happened. "Is there another question?" Henry asked Charlotte. "What's your greatest fear, Hank?" Rosa said. "I was hoping you would forget to ask me," Henry said, and they laughed. Henry poured more tea for Rosa, took another Oreo for himself, and then was quiet for some time. "It's not a hard one to answer," he said. "It's just not something I like to think about, to be honest." "Well, they sent this poor girl all the way from Boston, so you better answer." "It's ugly, I guess," he said, his voice wavering. "Go ahead." "That I won't die first is my fear, that I'll be left here without you."